up being on some chill shit. We go 0 to 100, nigga, real quick.
Bad guy Muay Thai is here today, and Joffer is not here because he's Inferno Training Performance Center in Marlboro, New Jersey. I don't even know how long I've known Steve, probably quite a few years at this point, and reconnected. I'm back in the States. I haven't been training that much, and I just wanted to bring Steve into the studio because Steve's at a really cool gym here. All his guys are awesome, and people need to know about his facility, what he does, and where he's been. So, Steve, if you could just kind of tell us a little bit about yourself and, you know, your martial arts history and, you know, some generalizations about the gym.
Absolutely, man. Actually, I think we first met, I don't think you mentioned, the Inferno Training and Performance Center. It's in Marlboro, New Jersey. We're affiliated with Team Pellegrino MMA. Kurt Pellegrino is my coach. And actually, that's who awarded my black belt, along with Marcelo Garcia. So, which was an awesome experience. I got my black belt about a year and a half ago. Prior to opening up the gym, I was actually a slave to the corporate world.
Oh, just like everybody else, right?
Unfortunately so. I'm going to be 32. I never did any kind of martial arts or anything until I was 23 years old. I wish that I would have found jiu-jitsu and you know, martial arts sooner in my life.
Same here. I wish I started training like some of these kids when they were, you know, 10, 12, something like that.
It's crazy, man. I mean, I have a kids program over here, and I have these kids who are, you know, some of them 8, 9, 10 years old, and they're a sponge at that age. It's, you know, not to get off topic, but like, I, you know, talking about kids, I just recently started a new hobby, and I was discussing this with you before, surfing. And
you're like a white belt, one stripe as surfing?
Oh, I'm fucking, maybe I got a stripe, man. I'm at it for 2.5 months. I definitely think the jiu-jitsu and the martial arts helped out, but I got a long ways to go before I see my black belt. That'll be like another 10 years of training before I get a black belt. But
lifetime commitment, for sure.
100%. But one of the things that I meant that I realized with you know, kids versus adults is, you know, I have so many people coming to the gym, and, you know, I think that as adults we get discouraged really, really fast. As a kid, you know nothing, right? Like you're born, you know, you can't walk, you can't talk, you can't fucking
your
feed
ego
yourself.
Isn't that big when you're 10 years old either.
Exactly. That's exactly the point. And, you know, you do things because you're having fun. I mean, like when you're a kid, you know, you could stare in a corner and spin around and you think it's a blast, you know? And the thing is like, as a kid, you learn to walk, you fall 1,000 times, you don't give a shit. You get up and you keep moving.
It doesn't hurt as much either.
Yeah. Yeah, for
now
sure.
Now at 31, when you get thrown or you get taken down or you know, get in a bad position.
Oh, you become a pussy.
My arms are all bruised.
You're scared to hurt yourself. You're like, I got to work the next day. As a kid, you don't got to worry about that.
I'm scared to hurt the other guy. He's got a family and, you know, kids and all that too.
For sure, for sure. But I think, you know, we get discouraged too much as an adult, and we let, you know, our discouragement, you know, if we're interested in jiu-jitsu or we're interested in something and we're not immediately good at it, you know, immediate gratification, we give up on it way too fast, you know. And it's something that I've learned through martial arts, to stick through something day in and day out and grind through. And eventually you will see the benefits and the results.
Well, you're kind of living the ultimate American dream. You, like you said, you quit your 9-to-5 corporate America, like New York City job, and you're like, fuck it, I'm just going to kind of like throw caution to the wind, take my money that I have and invest in something that could be awesome or could be bust. And right now, a few years later, you know, the gym looks
been
awesome.
Growing. Yeah, the gym's been growing. I moved into a bigger facility. We started out in a 2,500 square foot facility, moved into a place double the size in a 5,000 square foot facility. Team's growing. My guys are doing better. I have people who started here as white belts who 3 years later are, you know, close to getting their purple belts. I have other blue belts that came over here that are close to being brown belts. I have purple belts who came with me who are now currently brown belts. So the team and everybody is growing strong, and there's no supplement for time. And I've realized that, you know, through martial arts, you know, it's the same way I approach my business. When I first opened up the school, I can't expect to have a class of 30 people on the mat like it is now. You know, it starts with 2 or maybe, you know, 1, or I'm lucky if anyone shows up, you know?
That's got to be almost like
discouraging.
Embarrassing and discouraging. Like, I put so much time and money and
three
people that show up.
It's all about perspective. You want to know what? And when it's very easy to run a room and run a class when there is, you know, 20, 30 people in the room, the energy feeds off itself. When you have 2 people in the room, it's my job as an instructor to make those two people feel like, fuck it, dude, I just got a private session. Like, I just got a private session from a high-level jiu-jitsu guy, and I paid, like, virtually nothing.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
It's, I've had quite a those in my day where, you know, you go to a school, it's real small, and there's three or four guys, and you literally get, you know, an hour private instruction.
Yeah, well, you leave one of two things. You're like, wow, that sucked. Because, look, at the end of the day, I love people, and I think making relationships with people is the greatest thing in the world. But the human race is fucking weak. Overall, I mean, we are weak fucking people. We, you know, we're followers. We're most of us are a bunch of sheep.
Compared to other things in nature, yeah, like yeah. A snake or a mountain lion,
yeah,
or like a piece of paper.
Yeah, we're just, you want to know what, like I said, you walk into a gym and there's 20, 30 people on the mat, you're easier, you know, you're more likely to sign up or feel comfortable there because you're like, hey, look, 20, 30 other people must be doing it, it must be good. If you walk into a gym and there's one dude or nobody there, you're like, ah, this place must be shit because ain't nobody here, you know, but you can't have that approach, you know. You have to make a decision yourself and give everybody a chance, the instructor a chance. And I was fortunate where I had people come in and I was confident in my skills as an instructor. And, you know, I gave those people that good experience. And I even had, you know, other higher belts coming here because, you know, not talking on any other school, but, you know, you could go to another school and it has like a world champion is the name of the school. That world champion's not on the mat with you. You know what I mean?
Other schools are high level black belt guys and they won't even train with you.
Yeah.
They would teach a few techniques and then they go off and like text their girlfriend.
Yeah.
They leave early, go surfing or, you know, whatever it is. It's like you don't get that one-on-one relationship. I mean,
absolutely. It's like almost to just say that you're training at this big dude's facility, but
and
you don't
you pay
get access
as much as anywhere else.
Yeah, 100%,
you know?
Man.
100%. I've seen schools in California, you know, $250 a month.
Yeah.
$250 a month.
Look, everything's in skew. I mean, I'm fortunate. I try to make sure that I roll with every one of my guys. A big guy who I look up to in jiu-jitsu and as an overall person is my instructor's instructor, who's Marcelo Garcia. I try to make it up myself. Me and Kurt, you know, try to travel up there at least one day a week. And you know, it's amazing. I mean, that guy's, I refer to him, I say the GOAT, greatest of all time. You know, I mean, there's a ton of guys up, you know, I mean,
for a young guy, he's definitely like a Yoda in the sport.
Yeah. I mean,
everybody goes there to train with them.
Everybody all over the world.
He makes everybody film it too.
No secrets. I mean, the guy has no secrets. He films the class that he teaches on the mat. He shows you what he does. He doesn't hold anything back. He rolls with everybody in the room. He's super accessible. You could ask him questions at any time. I mean, there's some other great guys. Believe me, I mean, I know that, you know, I have other guys that I look up to in the sport, but I don't think that anybody's going to argue if you say that Marcelo is, you know, if not the greatest of all time, one of the greatest guys to ever go on the mat, you know?
He's definitely up there along with, you know, all the other big names in the sport. I mean, you can't mention, like, Henzo without mentioning Marcelo, without mentioning, you know, any
of
the other.
Yeah, of course, man. And it's funny,
guys.
You have these younger dudes. Like I said, unfortunately, I didn't find jiu-jitsu until I was 23 years old. And I opened up a school. My school, I've been training 9 years. It's just about going to be 9 years. And you know, I opened up a school after training about, you know, 5.5-6 years. You know, I was working in finance. You know, I was fighting professional mixed
suit
martial
and tie.
Arts. Yeah,
fighting the suit and tie lifestyle.
Yeah, fighting the slave to corporate America, being a hamster spinning on the fucking wheel. But anyways, you know, I always thought that I needed to build up my name and a reputation to open up a school. And then, you know, the more and more I looked at it, I said, wow, you know, like at the end of the day, like you could be a world champion. And like, and I'm not saying that's just one approach. You know, you build a name being a world champion.
You could build a name being a world champion. You could also build a name by being a good dude and respectful person in the industry.
Yeah.
Like you don't want to be people, you know, involved in like scandals or money laundering.
Good character. Good character goes a long way.
And I could tell you, like, I've trained at a lot of different schools around the world and your guys here. Like you were saying, you built some of these guys from scratch.
Of course, man.
And that's a reflection of you because 99.9% of the people here are really good people.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that. That honestly, that means a lot to me because, like I said, look, at the end of the day, we're a team. You know, I may be the captain of the team, but the team is it, you know, you could have one captain. This is a team sport. I know when we go out there on the mat and you compete, it's one-on-one, but it's your team who gets you there. And, you know, like I said, you know, I'm an older dude now, and I just started getting into competition now as a black belt. And even like this week, you know, like, look, we're talking about Marcelo. I'm the same age as him. I'm 31 years old. You know, I'm going to be 32. And I just started getting more into competition now, you know.
And now he's retiring.
And the dude's retired. Yeah, the dude's retired.
Same age, retired.
I'm on the mat. You know, I go up over there, and I'm fortunate I get opportunity to roll with guys like Gianni Grippo and Dylan Danis and, you know, Mateus and, you know, the guys, some of the best guys in the world, you know. And, you know, now when I approach competition, for me, like, I'm competing this weekend at the Pan Ams. And, I'm the older dude. I'm 32. These
Masters.
Guys,
yeah, Masters are
I could be going to Masters, you know. But I'm not ready to do that yet. Again, I started a little early, a little later in life, so I don't feel like my body has the mileage. I take care of myself. I stay in shape. I still feel like I could hang with the younger guys. This week I have I'm doing the no-gi Pan Ams, and I got two studs that I've actually lost to in competition who had won my bracket the last two following years, who is Gary Tonin from Ocean County BJJ.
Total stud.
Dude's he's a monster. Can't take anything away from any of those guys, man. As well as AJ Agazarm, who I lost to last year in the no-gi Pan Ams as well. So I'm looking forward to hopefully getting redemption, you know, on both of those and taking hold some hardware myself.
What's it feel like to be able to compete against somebody like Gary Tonin? I mean, he's like, you know, he came off a huge win in Metamoris against Kit Dale, who I'm not really a big fan of, but whatever. But, I mean, he's a huge name in the sport right now, and he's a local guy in New Jersey. I mean, dude, is it intimidating at all for you, or do you feel like you are on the par with these guys?
Yeah,
like,
you want to know what, man? Honestly, I mean, I always say that there's three...
Because sometimes the name precedes the person, you know? Like, there's a lot of hype build up around, not him per se, but, you know, he's got a little bit of, like, a momentum.
100%, man. I'm very, very, I think we're all humans. I have respect for guys. I have respect for what they do in the sport, and I wouldn't take anything away. But I'm also confident in myself as a person and as a jiu-jitsu practitioner. Now, I have no doubt in my head. I feel that I am on the same level of some of the best guys in the world. Not that I am the best guy in the world, but I do feel that I do have high level jiu-jitsu and I could be competitive with anybody.
For sure.
You know, the biggest edge, you know, that sometimes gets in my head is, these guys compete on a regular basis and have been for such a long time. And there's no supplement for experience. So some of these guys, I mean, look, AJ's from California. He's flying over here to do the no-gi Pan Ams. You know, he competes in tournaments all the time. It's just another day in the office. You know, he also, these guys who don't have a school just yet, they have the opportunity where they get to roll with other high-level black belts and brown belts every day.
And if you wanted to go, like if they wanted to go to this school for a couple of days and that school for a couple of days, it's a little easier. You're here running a business.
I'm running my school here, man. This is priority. So my approach to the tournaments nowadays, and you know, I honestly think it's worked a lot of in benefit to me. Instead of putting any pressure on myself, I go to a tournament. I'm kind of like, don't get me wrong. I mean, I train hard.
Oh, of course, I train hard
all the time. You know, so
I see you training here. You know, every class, every day, rolling with everybody, man.
100%. You know, I'm here all the time. I don't really change my training regimen for a tournament. You know, I used to think like put pressure on myself and every roll I'd be counting points and, you know, it would be like a buildup. Now I kind of go into a tournament. I'm like, hey, dude, fuck it. Like, go have fun. Enjoy the experience. I have the opportunity where I get to compete against some of the best guys in the world. So obviously I'm going to that tournament and I want to win. But win, lose, or draw, all I want to do is enjoy the experience.
It's good for the school, too, because you're out there wearing your shirt, man. Wearing your shorts, meeting people, networking,
absolutely.
Inviting people to your school.
And absolutely. The networking thing is you know, look, you know, whether...
It's a small community, too. So, like, you know, if you... Maybe you want to invite Gary over here to come train with you guys and then reciprocal agreement to go over there and train with those
guys.
Of
course, man.
Things like that.
I think that, you know, nowadays, I think back in the day, like, cross-training was, like, so forbidden and it was...
So forbidden. You were almost like, if somebody found out, you were, like, exiled
from
the school.
Yeah, you were exiled from your whole team. You couldn't train anywhere. It was crazy.
It's still,
man,
like that at a lot of schools too.
Look, to each his own, and everybody has their own reasons for things. You know, my biggest thing is I want people on the mat who want to be on the mat and that want to be here. If they think that they're going to reach their goals and they're a better fit with another team, so be it. I'm not going to hold anything against you personally or even on a business relationship. What I do expect, if somebody does come here and they're a part of the team, you know, you fulfill your obligation and you're on the mat and you know, you train and, you know, you're here as long as you say that you're going to be here, you know. You know, I think that that cross-training and going to other schools, I've done it myself, you know, throughout the sport, And I still do, man. I mean, I think you have to.
You have to get out of your comfort zone.
You have to. It's the only way to grow.
You have to go train with some good wrestlers. You have to go train with other judo guys. You have to go train with other Muay Thai guys. Like
100%. And I think nowadays you're fortunate because you have school owners like myself and other people where I go to other schools. I bring my guys to other schools.
I think it's part of a younger generation. I think that older closed off mentality is part of like that older generation, almost like a cult. Like you can't talk to anybody outside of your cult because maybe if you do, you'll find out that what I'm teaching you isn't as good as maybe what's, you know, that's just my thing.
Well, look, everybody always thinks that the grass is greener. That's just human nature. You always constantly think, no matter where you are, that, oh, maybe somewhere else is better. Maybe what they're doing, maybe if I went there, I'm going to learn more. And the truth is anytime you go somewhere else, anything new is first exciting, all right? And then, like, you know, as you fall into the same routine, things don't change all that much, you know? So to me, when you're looking for a team, you want to find an instructor that uses, you know, a method of teaching that works for you. I mean, for instance, you know, there's certain people who I try to instruct this way. I try to be extremely detail-oriented. I talk a lot through my classes. I have a YouTube channel where I'm pretty brief, and you can check it out.
But you also keep things really simple, too. You're not showing this high-level, crazy flying, you know, what I mean, sometimes, but, you know.
I try to call it the rabbit in the hat, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, like nice that one trick that. Move, yeah. But you keep, like, you know, you keep things kind of like how I learned jiu-jitsu from my old coach, very, like, basics, drilling, basic jiu-jitsu,
getting good at basics. Look, Bruce Lee said it best, man. I'd rather drill one kick, and he's got the shirt on. Perfect, man. But he's got, you know, he said, I fear the man who practices one kick 10,000 times than a man who practices 10,000 kicks once.
Yeah, he also says hack away at the unessential, so get rid of all the useless bullshit, which I'm a huge fan of, too. So.
Yeah, 100. He's got quotes all day, man. Oh, I mean, God, flow like water. I mean,
he's got everything.
The podcast wouldn't be long enough. The man is wise amongst his years.
Well, that's why I was talking to Daryl the other day, and we were going over like some crazy Baron Bolo leg reaps and all this stuff.
Daryl all day, man.
Yeah, and you know, we were talking about, it's like, man, if you look at mixed martial arts, there's only so many finishes that ever happen, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, there's only ever been in the UFC one twister, one omoplata, but there's been a million guillotines, a million arm bars, a million chokes.
Yeah.
You know, so, like, to me, that's, like, basics.
Yeah, those are things that works, man. It's always cool to find, like, you know, a cool transition to get somewhere, to take someone's back.
Something real sexy.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, I like the moves that have style points all day.
Oh, yeah, you know? Jumping over, like cool spin, you know,
headstand. Taking the back or crab riding. Or I dig all that, and I practice all that stuff, and I try to add it to my game. But, I tell my guys, to me, good jiu-jitsu, I don't want to be the guy who, I come up with this with a move that you've never seen before and it works once. And then after I try to do it again, now you know what to expect and you could defend it. I want to be that guy in jiu-jitsu who, like a Kron Gracie I'm fucking drawing a blank. Kron's father.
Hickson, the greatest of all time. The granddaddy.
Right? So I want to be a guy like that where I'm going to say, hey, I'm going to armbar your right arm in 10.
All day.
9. You know, and you know what I'm going to do. But you just can't stop it because my control and my technique is that good. That's the type of jiu-jitsu that I want. That's the type of jiu-jitsu that I try to teach. I want to teach people to control a position and dominate. I don't want to be that guy who, yeah, you have me in bottom side, and then all of a sudden I do some crazy ass roll and I'm fucking fartle plottoing you. All right, it may look cool and that one time, but it's not effective. You know, it's not effective at a high level or at a high percent. You know.
Now, what do you think about, like, since you've kind of been coming like a full time coach now? You're coaching jiu-jitsu guys, Muay Thai, wrestling on some levels, and you know, you got some professional fighters and amateur fighters here. Has your transition to coaching helped your teaching, or has it become kind of like, it's almost like frustrating for you?
You hit the nail on the head with all of them. It's definitely frustrating at times. It 100% has helped my jiu-jitsu because it gives me a new understanding and different perspective. I have people who ask like questions that sometimes I'm just like, dude, I would never. I mean, sometimes they're weird, and you know, but like somebody asks questions about, hey, why am I doing this? And it makes me really, really process and understand the move a little bit better. So as far as that goes, you know, it definitely is. It has helped my game a lot. It becomes extremely frustrating when you're like, And, you know, like I said, I'm learning something new now, so I'm sure I fuck up on the same thing 1,000 times. You know, I pop up and someone's like, yo, keep your knees bent. As simple as that sounds, you know, when you're first new on a board, I may be standing up straight and busting my ass 9 times out of 10. You know, it's the same thing. Like, I just taught a class this morning, and I was, you know, saying to the guy who actually films for some of the YouTube videos that we do, and I'm like, dude, I'm like, did you not just see me teach this move step by step?
Are you paying attention?
Yeah, and I'm like, do you not see every single person around here is doing something? Everyone's doing something a little different. I'm like, you know, it gets frustrating as a coach, you know, and sometimes I have to step back and realize that, you know, I was there too, you know, and you know, it's not a question of being, of getting upset with it, but you have to have patience, you know. I definitely have to have patience as a coach. On that same note, when I see, like, you know, it gives me a different responsibility. As a coach, it's fun to coach guys, but I'm realizing more and more, and I'm always evolving and trying to grow as a coach and as a person for that matter. But, you know, I'm always realizing, like, at this point, it's like, I would love to almost coach people individually. And that's not, unfortunately, that's not my job. My
it's
job.
Also not reality either. It's not, like, you know, you have hundreds of students
exactly.
here.
Exactly.
How can you coach everyone? How can there's you enough coach, hours in a day or the week.
Exactly. 100%. So I'm starting to realize, like, that my job as a school owner is changing. It's building a self-sufficient community. You know, and that's why, like, when you were talking about, hey, I love the way the guys are here, you know.
Because I remember coming here a couple of years ago when you first opened in the other space, you know, like two doors down or whatever there was kids here that were brand new, that were white belts, that had never really learned jiu-jitsu. And now, was it 3 years later?
Yeah.
You know, these kids are game. Like, they're tough.
Yeah, yeah. I have some guys who have definitely came a long way.
I remember Matt. Right, he was brand new when he came here. Kid's a tough kid now.
Yeah, Matt actually after I mean Matt, you were talking about an elite athlete. I mean, Matt played college football. He actually went to, like, not the NFL, the AFL or whatever, that small organization that
Canadian
was
Canadian Football League.
Not the Canadian, the fucking guys who went, like, on the little league that had, it's like a smaller field.
Okay, you know? Like the arena football.
The arena. Yeah,
that's crazy.
Yeah. He actually, like, tried out for a team there. And, you know, bottom line is getting somebody who has extreme athletic ability. And in short time, I mean, in under a year, the kid got his blue belt. And I'm not one to hand something out, but he earned it. I mean, the kid was a blue belt as far as I'm concerned, a high-level blue belt after a period of time. He, you know, he fought. He did an amateur fight, which only after about 9 to 10 months of training.
Wow.
And, you know, the only person, and I'm not fucking trying to big up myself, but the only person who I know who did that as well was me. And he reminded me a lot of myself when he came into the gym, you know. And do you want to know what it was? It wasn't that we were both athletic or super talented.
You're just stubborn.
We showed up every day. Matt was on my mat
every day.
You know, and when I first got into martial arts and I got into jiu-jitsu, I was on the mat every day, man, day in, day out.
Same,
you know?
Here. But sometimes, you know what sucks? Life gets in the way. And that's what
life gets in the way if you let it, man. I'm not saying, look, everyone has circumstances. And I agree, people have jobs, people have work. But look, there's too many people that I know who are like, hey, like I have no time of day. But meanwhile, they're talking about shows on TV, like fucking Desperate Housewives, or yo, did you see? I don't even know. I'm not a big TV fan.
I watch a few shows, but I DVR.
But I'm like, yo, look, you're watching Boardwalk Empire. It's an hour.
You could
be exactly, man. You can wake up early. You know, I mean, it's all about priorities. It's all about, you know, what you want to do and being productive. And I'm not saying that you shouldn't have an outlet like watching TV. But look, if you don't have time to take care of yourself, you know, which, you know, whether it be jiu-jitsu or any kind of exercise.
Eating healthy?
Yeah, eating. Come on, man. I mean, at the end of the day, if you don't have time for yourself, then you're doing something wrong, or something in your life needs to change.
It's kind of funny, too. I think all the good jiu-jitsu guys in the world at one time or another have, like, really dysfunctional personal lives.
You know, I'm not going to comment on that.
Not all the really guys. But
I feel like you're trying to pry into something over here.
I'm just saying a lot of good guys, like, they have – it's hard to find people in your life that – can understand, like, you want to train 2 or 3 times a day or keep or those people be understanding to even stick around. Because sometimes it's a hard like kind of world to kind of float in, like managing your personal life.
100%.
And managing your martial arts career, because, you know, when you start jiu-jitsu, I mean, even now, like for me, I travel a lot for work. But, you know, when I'm home, my time is limited and I like to come and train.
It's got
to
be an outlet.
It's hard to find that, like, that medium for everybody.
Absolutely, man. Something that I've been, not that I'm a fucking philosopher by any means, but something that
street philosopher.
Yes, my street cred. But something that I've been saying a lot lately is, and you know, I think it drove home with me, and I think it makes sense, is that, you know, we don't appreciate the journey until we reach the destination. Like, no matter what it is in life, like, if you want to be a doctor or a lawyer, like, you got to spend countless hours in school and years and sacrifice. And, you know, you even have to, like, you know, you're studying hours and hours throughout the night.
24-hour shifts.
Yeah, 20, exactly.
Like,
exactly.
Jesus Christ.
And, like, you're not getting paid for it at the time. You're not reaping any rewards. But at the end, when you finally get that degree and you finally start practicing, you're
but
like...
the end is almost the beginning.
Exactly. It's a, you know, 100%,
like,
man.
Most people say, you know, when they get their black belts, it's like,
a new
now
journey.
It starts.
Yeah, it's a new
now
journey,
it
man. It's definitely a new journey. But, you know, you look back on those endless, countless hours and endless, you know, countless nights of sleepless nights, and you're like, wow, that made me who I am. That, you know, and it's the same thing with jiu-jitsu or anything. Like, you get on the mat, jiu-jitsu's not fun. If you've never trained jiu-jitsu and you get on the mat, you're gonna get your neck messed up, you're gonna get knees messed up,
the learning curve
shit's
sucks.
Gonna hurt. It sucks, dude.
The only
it
thing
sucks.
I could equate to is if from people that have been snowboarding, if you ever skateboard
anything, man,
you could jump
anything
on a skateboard
in life,
and move.
Yeah.
Snowboarding.
Like, snowboarding, you eat shit all day long.
Every day.
In jiu-jitsu, you eat shit all day long.
All day. You know, you go, look, surfing, I go out on the waves.
You
like,
just eat shit all day long.
Every single day I go out, like, if it's a small day, I do okay, right?
But you get one, it's awesome.
Oh, it's the best ride ever. That's like the carrot on the stick. That's what keeps me coming back. Do you know what I mean?
So in jiu-jitsu, you get one awesome move or one escape.
You get that
one
submission
bar,
that,
like,
you learn, and you're like, dude, it's a new toy. Like, it's like being a kid on Christmas morning. You learn how to do an armbar and you hit it live. You're like, holy shit, that was the coolest thing ever, bro.
Dude, 10 years later I hit an armbar and somebody, I'm like, this is
you're
awesome.
Like, yes. It never gets old, man.
Never.
You know, but like that's the thing. It's like, we need to, you know, your desire to reach that destination has to be greater than the pain to get there. Like, you run a marathon, running a marathon 26.2 miles. I got guys over the gym over here, Edge Fitness. These guys are elite athletes, man. I mean, they do triathlons, they do Ironmans and shit. And for you people who don't know, an Ironman is, you know, I think it's a 2.4-mile swim followed by a 110-mile bike ride
followed by a marathon,
which is 26.2 miles.
And usually they do it in, like, really shitty places like Hawaii where it's
or
super
Puerto
hot.
Rico. Or, yeah, it's crazy,
or
man.
Or somewhere in the mountains or elevations gnarly.
Where you can't even breathe. It's bizarre. Like, if it's not hard enough, we're going to fuck with you and we're going to take oxygen out of the air.
Put you at, like, 8,000, 9,000 feet.
Yeah.
Puerto Rico? Yeah, watch out for the sharks.
Yeah. and the locals. These dudes do it competitively, you know?
I can't even imagine.
And it's like, I say to myself, I'm like, you know, it's just like anything. Like, when you're going through that race, that shit sucks. You know, it sucks, dude. You're talking about 10 hours. You're not eating. You know, you're fatigued.
You're peeing
your
pants.
Yeah, literally.
Literally,
I mean, legitimately peeing your pants, all right?
Some people poop their pants.
Getting back to the Fordo Plata. But seriously, but when you finish that cross line and you pass that cross line, it is probably one of the most satisfying, most self-rewarding things that you could ever, that nobody could ever take away from you.
I can't even imagine what that feels like.
No, well, you can, because there's other things in life that I'm sure are goals that you've set out and you've accomplished. You know what I mean? But that's the way that I try to put, you know, life and everything in perspective. You know, like I said, opening up a school, nah, dude, it wasn't easy. You know, and like many times I got discouraged and I was like, hey, look, you know, maybe this isn't going to happen, you know? But, you know, throughout like martial arts, I've realized that, look, you stick with it, you keep on grinding, and eventually it's going to pay off. You know, whether, you know, things may not happen as fast as you want. You may not get good at something as fast as you want. But if you grind out every day, you're going
to
get better.
Nothing that's easy to attain is worth having, too.
100%, man. If it was easy, it'd be boring.
There'd be 1,000 gyms. There'd be 1,000,
yeah,
you know, everything.
Yeah, and it would be boring. Think about it. If you conquered, if you were a master of your craft.
First aid jiu-jitsu, you know, got my black belt.
Well, and even when you are a black belt, I'm still learning every day.
Of course.
I tell everybody, look, martial arts, the reason what's great about martial arts is you strive for perfection.
But people forget you study martial arts.
Yes.
It's like a,
yes.
You know, it's like
you put time in, man.
When they say, like, professor, I mean, I'm not big on that name, but you literally are studying this. It's a lifelong commitment.
Dude, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, it's just like, look, people don't realize, like I told you I go to Marcellus once a week, right? And for me, I write that off as a business expense. People are like, yo, what do you? Look, I pay gas or tolls or whatever it is. If I was an accountant or I was a lawyer and I went to a seminar to learn about my about
and you got a bunch of drinks and dinner business.
Yeah, yeah, that's a business expense.
I know what you're
saying. So what the hell is it? Look, my craft is jiu-jitsu. You know, I've put in years and years of jiu-jitsu studying this art. You know, and the art of jiu-jitsu, I'm not going to say that it's harder, but I'm not going to say that it's easier than learning. You know, than learning science behind behind surgery or calculus or being a anything, you know.
It's its own. It's
information.
Own, yeah,
it's information.
Subject,
and
yeah.
You have to process that information. It's a lot of information. So to become a master of your craft takes time no matter what it is that you do.
But think about if you were a doctor. It'd be 4 years of college, right?
Regular college, yeah.
4 years undergrad. Of post-grad.
Yeah.
And then your internship, you know.
Yeah,
so,
you got to do residency.
So, I mean, that's 10 or 12 years. So if you're 10 or 12 years in jiu-jitsu, to me, that's almost the same thing.
100%. Yeah.
Why is it any different? Just because it's hands and feet instead of scalpels and masks. Like
that's society for you, man. And
sure.
we don't have time for that topic of conversation because that goes all day. Because like I told you, I love human beings. I love making relationships with people. But as an overall, as society or as an overall species, people are fucking weak, man. People are weak, or the majority of people are weak.
And people don't realize how weak they are until they encounter somebody else that's a little stronger than them or knows a little bit more than them. I mean, you fought. You've had, what?
Yeah,
how many fights did you have?
I did 2 amateur fights and I did 3 professional fights. And I'm hoping that within time, again, at this point in my life, I just want to compete for me. And fighting is definitely something that is it's that marathon, it's putting all that pressure, the build up doing it, and it's definitely something that I would like to, again, I'm not that old. I'm going to be 32.
Do you think now, since you have more experience in martial arts, you're training for fighting and like your whole mentality and how you would prepare and it would be night and day, right? Like I know when we were kids training jiu-jitsu, I would be like running and like overtraining and training 8 days a week and all that stuff. And now it's like, days off are important.
Definitely, man.
Sometimes some rice is important. Things are so much
different.
You
got to listen to your body, man. There's no one way to do anything. And I'm a big advocate of, I say, look, there's no such thing as right and wrong. What's right at one time, right at for one person, may be wrong for somebody else.
I agree 100%.
And that's okay. There's not one diet. I've gone through all those stages, man. I've done I'm only going to eat this and I'm only going to watch that. I've realized more and more as I get older and, that everything is okay in moderation. Anything that I do in life, too much of anything good is bad. You know what I mean? And it's
sometimes.
Yeah, it depends who you're asking.
Exactly.
But
depends what night of the week.
Only on the weekends, right?
Have you considered if you can choose, if you wanted to do pursue a professional fighting avenue, you fought in some of bigger promotions in New Jersey, which have fed into the UFC or Bellator, or you can just run the school full time.
Because
there's a lot of money in fighting now than there was maybe a few years ago when you were doing it.
When I first started training, all right, like I told you, I thought that I needed to build a resume of fighting and winning tournaments in order to build a name. And then I realized that it's really a business and that, people are going to come in because they're going to Google search jiu-jitsu. I say that I'm a black belt under Kurt Pellegrino or, talking about Marcelo Garcia or, that's people in the industry, in the community are going to know those names. Somebody who never trained jiu-jitsu, I get phone calls, hey, you guys do karate? Yeah, I do karate. I do kung fu. I do whatever you want because people don't even know what it is.
I do what works.
Yeah. Look, people don't even know what it is. I let them come down and I expose them to what we do, and because if you don't have the knowledge, your perception is completely skewed. And as far as fighting goes, I always wanted to be an instructor. I think that there's 3 facets in life for I guess towards jiu-jitsu. And I always say, look, it's a practitioner, as a competitor, and as a teacher. And I always, I think that you need to be a good practitioner to do either of them. You have to be good at jiu-jitsu in order to be a good fighter. You have to be good at jiu-jitsu in order to be a good instructor.
Of course.
Right? Or understand jiu-jitsu. Now, you may be a great competitor, but maybe a terrible teacher.
And there's quite a few of those.
There's
a
ton of guys,
There's a ton of guys that are black belts that are awesome competitors. And
can't teach worth dick. You know, and then you have the other.
There's nothing wrong with that.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. We all have gifts. All right. Now, if I'm assessing myself as a practitioner, you know, again, I'm confident in my skills and, you know, that, you know, I feel comfortable with the black belt wrapped around my waist. And as a competitor, I'm okay. I definitely don't think, and you know, I'm hoping that one day, and that's why, you know, that's why I still compete now, because I want to compete on the mat the same way that I train on the mat when I'm just training. And I've yet to reach that comfort with competition because I haven't competed enough. You know, like I told you, maybe 5 fights. You got guys, you know, it may take 10, 15 fights, you know. The other thing
so
is
like 30, 40, 100 fights.
Of course. And a lot of these guys come from, like, look, I tell, you know, wrestling is such great.
I was watching Phuket Dreaming last night. Andrew told me to watch it. It's this series on YouTube. And there's these, you know, these guys are, a lot of them are Australian New Zealanders. And they're living and training in Thailand.
Fight, like, every week.
The Thai fighters fight, they don't even spar.
Yeah.
These guys are like 16 years old. They have like 50 fights. I'm like,
yeah,
shit.
Yeah. Yeah, literally. I mean, I went to Thailand. And in fact, I mean, that's, I don't want to get into that whole spiel, but that's literally when I went to Thailand is when I came home, quit my job, and opened up the school. It was after I did my last MMA fight. You know, I moved down to Jersey. I was fighting and training at Pellegrino MMA in Belmar, New Jersey. And Kurt was my coach. And I told him that I wanted to open up a school, and he was getting ready to fight Gleason Tebow at the time. And I was helping out a little bit with the no-gi and the instruction over there. And he was like, hey, Steve, why don't, you know, before you open up a school, why don't you, you know, through my fight camp, why don't you teach the classes on, you know, Tuesday and Thursday or whatever the schedule was at that time and see if you still enjoy teaching. And dude, I remember, like, literally, you know, he fought Gleason Tebow at Newark.
Yep.
You know, we were all down there as a school. It was an awesome event. It was a super close fight that, you know, I really could have gone either way. I think a lot of fights are draws, and I think that was one of them. It really could have gone either way. Obviously, you know, I think it should have gone towards Kurt. You know, Gleason ended up getting the split decision.
It was a great fight too.
Awesome fight, man. But the point was, like, literally I was, you know, at the after party, I walked over to Kurt, and I was like, you know, and I was like, not that it was a time to talk about it. I was like, hey, dude, you know, I know that this isn't a great time, but I'm like, I definitely want to open up my school still. You know, I was like, because he was like, yo, check it out. And, you know, we'll talk after the fight. And he was like, I was like, yeah, definitely want to open up a school. And he was like, yo, definitely do, man. Best of luck.
So you were saying you went up to Kurt after the fight, and you're like, I want to open up my own school. And I'm sure he was a little pissed because, you know, he had just lost a
yeah, it was, at the time, but, you know, he, like,
awkward.
Yeah. He was like, really? He's like, that's what we're talking about right now, you know? No, honestly, man, Kurt was super receptive when I did tell him that I wanted to open up a school, and he was supportive, and, you know, definitely, in fact, he's coming to teach class tonight, still comes down over here. I have a great relationship with him. You know, I look up to him. The guy has done so much in MMA and grappling, and it's kind of cool now. He's actually doing the no-gi Pan Ams. We both trained for the New York Open. He took like 2-3 years off, not because he wanted to. I mean, he had crazy injuries. The guy's been competing since
injuries,
he's six.
He has young kids.
Yeah,
he's, you know,
it's different
time with his family.
Yeah, man. Yeah, there's different. You know, different. Your
like
life
adult
changes.
Shit.
Yeah, life changes. Responsibilities. You know, definitely change and priorities change as you get older, you know?
I remember him saying back in the day, I think he missed something with his daughter, like maybe like a birthday or something, because he was training for fights, and, like, you know, he said it sucked, like, putting yourself through hell and then coming home and having to be, like, you know, around like a little baby, and just it was just hard for people.
Yeah, I mean, I know, and look, he still has some of that, you know, it still happens as a coach. You have obligations. I mean, just recently, I know he's had guys like Derek Kennington and, you know, and Liam, who was over by us, who you know, now trains over with Henzo and stuff, who just won the Bellator.
Look, sharp.
Yeah, Bellator. Yeah, he was a monster, man. Great training partner, great guy,
tough dude.
But, you know, I mean, look, as responsibility as a coach, those things come into play, too. What do you do when you have, it's not even you, but you have one-year fighters, you know, George Sullivan, you just had to fly down to Brazil. George Sullivan just fought in the UFC, you know.
And won again?
Yeah, and
smashing.
Won. Yeah, killed it, man, killed it. But it's like, you know, let's just say that weekend happened.
So George went down to Brazil and won. I mean, if it was my kid's birthday, that'd be kind of shitty. But, I mean, it's also like, it's also business, too. That's how you feed your family.
Yeah, dude, it's responsibilities, man. I mean, like I said, what do you do for that guy who's, like, if it's your son's birthday, or, you know, I have or somebody's got a tournament or something going, you have to put those things first, you know, as a coach. And like I said, I mean, obviously that's a reflection of you, you know, but you have to make sacrifices, and that's life, you know.
I remember one time I was coaching some of the younger kids at Kurt's, like James and some of the other younger guys, and they were doing a tournament, I don't know, somewhere in North Jersey in the summer, and my work called me to work on a Saturday to handle this situation. And I was like, I can't do it. I have another obligation. And they pretty much gave me like an ultimatum, like show up or, you know, say goodbye. So I had to think about, you know, my livelihood, but I also had to like think about my commitment to the kids I was helping coaching. I had to choose my livelihood at that point over the kids, and they were disappointed, and I felt bad as like a person, like being obligated.
No, but you can't, man. You can't.
But, you know, it kind of worked out in the best because I ended up leaving that job anyway, and my life took like a whole different, you know, turn. But I it was something I was like, man, this sucks. Like, I promised myself to these kids.
Of course. And look, that's sometimes life. You have to disappoint. You have to disappoint yourself. You have to disappoint people. There's no way around it, you know. But at the time, you have to do what's best for you, and you have to make a decision on something. You're not going to please everybody all the time. But speaking about kids, man, you know, one thing that I wanted to mention, you know, one of the things when I got involved opening up my own school is, you know, obviously I always want to be here, a part of my school, but, you know, some personal goals of mine is to travel. And, you know, I believe I'm on this earth one time, and, you know, I don't know what happens after that, you know.
Nobody knows. That's nobody the awesome
does.
Part
no,
of it.
Nobody does, man. So, traveling and you know, meeting new people and seeing new cultures and, you know, being exposed is one of the most amazing things. I mean, if you think about it, we live probably 95 or 99% of our life in like a 20-mile radius.
Oh, they
you know,
say the average person dies within 100 miles of where they're born.
Yeah, exactly.
That's crazy.
Exactly. And think about it. You go to your job, you come home, you know, maybe you go on vacation every now and then. And
well, that's why, like, for me, when I transitioned to the job that I have now,
awesome. I always say, man,
I'm very fortunate to have my job, but I was always in this position when I worked in corporate America, just like yourself. I was like 2 weeks off a year.
Yeah.
That's all I fucking get is 2 weeks off a year.
Yeah.
Or I get the same holidays as everybody else. So if I do want to go somewhere, do anything, it's like,
prices are up. It's crazy to travel.
Like, oh, hotel, $1,000 a night. Yeah. Oh, airline tickets, you know,
and
same thing.
Part of that's America. I mean, like, look, usually, like, I've met people in Australia.
It is our culture.
It's part of its culture.
Europe is way different. Like, take for example, France.
Yeah.
The whole country of France is on vacation.
Yeah.
The whole month of August.
Yeah.
You know, they're a little bit more liberal with their lifestyle, like the hour and a half lunches and things like that. But for me, I always thought, because I grew up, you know, not too far from here, I was fortunate enough to travel a lot when I was younger because my mom's job, I always thought there was more than this.
Of course.
You know, there was more than this. Like, I felt like there's something else pulling me away from where I am. Not that I dislike, you know, New Jersey or where I'm from.
Course.
I love it.
But you want to be exposed.
But I'm like, you know, like you've had a chance to go to Thailand and, you know, some islands and Costa Rica.
Yeah, no, I've done a decent amount of time. I've been to Brazil, Costa Rica, a lot of places.
It's not like this mind-altering experience, but it definitely changes you. It definitely sets you forward or sets you back a little bit. It makes you appreciate
it. It changes you. It definitely changes you, man. And that's, you know, throughout my travels, you know, we were talking about kids, and I definitely want to touch up on that because I actually just recently saw him again this week. A buddy of mine when I was in Costa Rica, his name's Leonidas. So, such a badass name. Leonidas.
Sounds like he's from the 300.
Yeah. But I always just call him Leo. But anyways, you know, he's in Hermosa. And, you know, he's a brown belt in jiu-jitsu. He's, I believe, under the Henzo Gracie banner. And he started an organization for kids called Pura Vida Fighting for Kids.
Yeah, I've seen you post that link a few times.
Yeah, I'm trying to set something up where maybe we could do a GoFund and, you know, get some donations over there. I mean, I know martial arts, you know, gives people sometimes a reason and a purpose. And this dude's like, he's a saint. Like, it's so crazy because he thinks of it as being nothing. But this dude, you know, he's not an underprivileged person. You know, his parents own like a bed and breakfast in Hermosa.
Which
is
like probably middle to upper class.
Yeah, he's middle upper class in Costa Rica.
They're
he's
doing
a
well.
Surf instructor. You know,
living
he
the lifestyle.
Has a good life. You know
trains
what I mean?
Jiu-jitsu.
Trains jiu-jitsu. Things ain't that bad, you know? And, you
but
know.
Costa Rica is really poor. Like, their disparity between rich.
In most countries, man, it's just such a bigger gap, and there's a lot more people in that gap. Not that we don't have disparities here. I mean, look, in America, I think like 1% of the population controls 99% of the money. It's like something bizarre.
51% of the people in our country earn a household combined income of $50,000 or less as of the last census.
Good luck in New Jersey with that one, man.
Yeah, 28% of this country make $25,000 or less combined household income.
Yeah,
it's just not it. We're known for like Kim Kardashian and Kanye West and people like that.
Yeah, we
you know?
Lose touch with reality.
We do,
especially if you're living
because
like the
you got a
thing.
Brand new pair of Vans and a flashy iPhone, and I got laptops and mixers, and you know that's all good. But we forget that there's a whole other culture of people that have nothing in this country.
We're the minority. You know, we are the minority.
Middle class doesn't exist hardly in this country as much as it used to.
Well, going back to this organization, man, you know, this guy actually...
So what does Leo actually do for this organization?
He's trying to make it a nonprofit organization in Costa Rica. And obviously the paperwork to do something like that takes a long time. And I think they've been operating, it's close to about 2 years or 3 years, but it's really been kicking off the last year. And, you know, they literally, like, built a facility, like hands, like, in stone and, like, you know.
They built, like, a
martial arts
facility?
Mats. Yeah, they built mats. They literally, like, old school style, like, Gracie Jiu-Jitsu style, like, got, like, the actual rubber with the tarp. Yeah, yeah, everything, man. And they have a facility down over there. And what he does is he physically picks these kids up in his car for like he has about 60, 65 kids.
Wow.
And he pays out of his own pocket cabs to pick up some of these guys. He has like the tiniest little car that you've ever seen. I can't think of the name of the car.
Like a Fiat or something.
It's tiny, bro. He fits 10 kids in it. 10 kids in the car. It's like a fucking clown mobile.
That's amazing. You know? Sounds like North Shore Hawaii.
Definitely. But
he picks these kids up every day or certain times a week.
He
and
picks
takes
them up
to go
like
train.
5 days a week, and it gives them a facility, a place to train at. These kids aren't going home watching TV. Some of the kids don't have fathers. Some of their mothers, you know, everyone comes from a different background, and you know, some of the kids have it worse than others. But the bottom line is he takes these kids and tries to give them something to look forward to, and in addition to giving them the training to look forward to, usually afterwards he'll serve food, you know, something small, but he knows that the kids are getting a meal, you know.
That's crazy. That's amazing. I mean, 60 kids doesn't sound like a lot.
Well, and this
dude,
is growing, 60 man.
60 kids is
this
a
is
lot
growing,
of people.
And you know, he came to the States recently, like the last couple of weeks.
Wasn't he here recently training with you?
He was. It came out completely unexpectedly, man. I reached out to him because I'm going to Costa Rica to get some surfing in December, and I wanted to help out with this organization.
Maybe I'll have to come with you.
I'll hold you to that, man.
All right. I could do a few days in Costa Rica in December.
Well, I actually got a bachelor party that I was going out for, and then I'm like, fuck it, man. I might as well stay a couple weeks longer.
Perfect.
So anyways, but, you know, he actually came over here because he's trying to raise money to – cars in Costa Rica are a boatload. It costs a lot of money.
When I was there about 10 years ago, they said to bring an American car to Costa Rica. So say a car costs $10,000 here, it resells for $20,000.
Yeah, it's
American
crazy,
Costa
man.
Rica.
It's crazy. So, like, he came over here. He was promised
a job.
He had
a church van. It'd be way better.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
He could pick up 30 kids.
That's what he's looking to do. So he actually came over here, somebody that he had met, I guess, in Hermosa or whatever it was. I don't know the exact details. But, you know, promised him a job where he could work for a couple months and make some good money. He came here, ended up not working out that way. And, you know, he was over here. And while he was here, he met up with the guy who owns Edge in Hoboken, another really good wrestling, MMA, and jiu-jitsu club. I think Dave Branch runs the jiu-jitsu program. They're also affiliated with Henzo's. Okay. And they did an open mat fundraiser, you know. And they also did one in California. I don't know exactly where, you know. So when I heard about that, I tried putting together something real small, like in the short nick of time.
Yeah, so you post something and it was like,
yeah, it was
three
like tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah, like 2 days from now. You know, whatever it was.
Like,
and we
damn,
had a, we
like,
had
I
a good outcome.
My whole closet out for these kids.
Yeah, we ended up doing like a little clothing drive and tried to raise a couple of dollars for it. And you know, we had a good outcome in the short amount of time. But you know, I'm honestly hoping that, you know, through the podcast and, you know, through gaining exposure, that, you know, maybe we could, you know, start, like I said, set up a GoFund Live account and maybe get people. You know, anything helps, man. Whether it's $5, $10, you know. If you could change somebody's life as simple as giving them jiu-jitsu.
Maybe buy $5 cups of coffee all day long.
Yeah.
I'll give up my $5 cup of coffee.
For one day, man. You know. For one day. You know, don't go to Starbucks. Go to fucking Dunkin'. Go to Wawa for a week.
Just don't have coffee that
you
day.
Know? Or don't have coffee. Yeah, absolutely, man. So
he's got about 60 kids, and he's training. What's he training them? Jiu-jitsu and judo?
He
and
teaches them jiu-jitsu, judo, and wrestling.
Kind of just like an after-school program. And
like I said, they do it every night. He gets the kids together. It gives them an outlook. These kids, like he was telling me, like for instance, like you got to remember, like they don't come from home and have cartoons or TVs to watch. So
they're just out in the streets or they're just
doing
whatever.
They can't wait. They're like, Leo, you picking me up today? I can't wait. We're doing jiu-jitsu. We're training. They, you know. And the thing is like, look, when you have hardships in life, it forces you to grow up a lot faster. You know, he looked at me the other day when I saw him, and you know, he's like, Steve, he's like, I promise you, one of these kids that come out here will be a world champ. He's like, they will be. He's like, and
they have nothing else to do but train. So if they're focused, he's like, that's
he's like,
awesome.
You talk to these kids. They're 6, 7 years old, 8 years old. They're talking like adults because they have no other choice, man. They have to fend for themselves.
Sink or swim.
Yeah, it's sink or swim, man. You have to grow up a lot faster. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that you know, it's childhood is great, you know. But you know,
the circumstance around people think like, oh, Costa Rica. I was in Costa Rica in 1999. Okay, so I'm really dating myself here. People think Costa Rica now, it's like Southern California, Playa Hermosa, like beautiful surf towns. But, dude, Costa Rica is impoverished. You see these resort towns. You see these professional surfers. You see these jiu-jitsu guys. Like, they're living in these nice areas, these Americanized areas. But go out some of these camps. Go into Jaco. Go in these other places.
Yeah, man.
It's I don't want to say shitty, but it's kind of shitty.
Yeah, look, it's just saying we have it here. You know,
oh,
I mean, that's the thing. Like, people don't realize, like, and that's the thing that I love about Leo. Like, when I ask him, like, hey, what can I do to help out? What can I do to help out the organization? You know, dead serious. His response, he tells, look, you don't have to. He's not about just helping the organization in Costa Rica. He's like, Steve, you want to know what would be good? He's like, if you can, do like a scholarship program at your gym. He's like, think about it. He's like, my thing, he's like, that's where I live. You know, I want to help the kids in Costa Rica because that's where I am. That's where
but
I'm
you
accessible.
You also want to take care of your own your
it's
own,
worldwide.
Your own
he's like, yeah,
own
he's
place.
Like, he's like, dude, he's like, this isn't about just helping the kids that I know. He's like, if you could help the people around you, offer a scholarship. Hey, make sure if a kid gets certain grades or maintain a certain GPA, you let them train on your gym for free.
Yeah,
you know, call it the Pura Vida Foundation.
Yeah, what if you had one kid in here, whoever he was, he comes in with a report card, whoever has the best grades gets a couple free months or something. Whatever,
yeah,
for that marking
man.
Period, that quarter.
Yeah, and that's the thing. That's the thing that I love about his mentality. He's about, you know, he says, look, kindness should be like
pay
a virus.
It and spread it good.
Yeah, he uses it like he says kindness and giving and being and helping people's out. He wants to make it viral. You know, it doesn't have to be, you know, segregated just in this section. He's like, you help somebody out, hey, you feel good for doing it. Sometimes, you know, it motivates you.
It resonates, too.
It resonates. He's like, it's fun. And what happens is that person that you helped out, you know, they appreciate it. They may help out somebody else. And so on and so forth. And like I told you, the human race is fucking as individuals. We're weak. We are weak. All right?
We're strong together.
You know?
I agree.
We form together like fucking Voltron.
No,
you know?
A lot of people shit on churches and stuff. I'm not a big fan of churches, but there's quite a few communities out there as religious organizations that do help their own people in like times of need. And since this is our church, you know, this is our religion, this is where we come and congregate as like friends of family. You know, we're hundreds of people strong. So the same thing as your buddy. Like, you get these people together. You never know who's a doctor, a lawyer, a dentist.
It's networking.
You pull on your strengths.
Community. Yeah, 100%, man. You know, like I said, if you're strong at something and I'm weak at something else, when we partner up together, we're strong. You know, we're filling our holes. We're filling gaps, you know, and that's what's important, you know. And I wish that, you know, I hope that everybody at some point understands the importance of making relationships and learning from each other. You know, just honestly, like, everybody has something to offer. So never hold yourself higher than anybody else. We all have our strengths and we all have our weaknesses, you know?
Cool, man. Well, I appreciate your time. I just want to wrap this up. I got two questions for you. One,
absolutely, man.
Do you have any shout outs? Anybody you'd like to thank? Any sponsors? Any websites you'd like to plug? Twitter's,
like I said,
YouTube's,
man,
all that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, look, you guys want to see any type of instructionals? I try to keep them short and brief. Again, if you haven't noticed yet, I have diarrhea of the mouth, so I do talk a lot. So I have some instructionals. You can check it out on Inferno TPC. If you type that in YouTube, some instructionals will come up. I try to come up with the technique of the week every week, so definitely check that out. You can check us out on Facebook, Inferno TPC, or you can hit on my personal Facebook, which is Steve Barnett. You know, told you, Inferno's affiliated with Team Pellegrino. Kurt Pellegrino needs no introduction by me, by any means. Dude's a legend in MMA and grappling, and looking forward to see him competing this weekend. Also, again, fortunate for being able to have the exposure and going up to train at Marcelo Garcia's, train with guys like Gianni Grippo and Mateus Dinas and all those guys over there, man. John Satava. You know, I'm very, very fortunate that I have exposure to those guys as training partners and everything. You know, besides that, you know, definitely if you have a chance, Pura Vida is currently on Facebook. You know, you could reach out to Leo if you're interested in making any donations. I'm trying to speak with him to get up a GoFund account, so, you know, let more people know about it.
We'll put all the links or everything in the notes of the podcast too, so you can just click on them and go.
Yeah,
right there.
Absolutely, man. And I want to thank you for Bad Guy Muay Thai for inviting me on the show and having me here. Like I told you, it's funny. I know you for a while, and I know Joffrey. I used to train with Joffrey a long time ago, and I've heard of Bad Guy Muay Thai, and I didn't know that you guys were the dudes running it, man. I had no clue. So
he approached me like a year ago about doing it, and I'm like, I don't know. And then finally one day we're just like, fuck it. And we've had like so many cool guests on.
Yeah,
it's just been an awesome networking thing.
It was really cool to be invited on the show, and we'll definitely do it again, you know, if you're up to it. And thanks for having me, man. It's been a pleasure.
All right, and my second question is, this is like our random question, so I'm gonna ask you something really ridiculous.
Oh God.
All right, if you can have,
you warn me on this one.
If you could get a hall pass and have one celebrity female for a date, who would it be?
I'm terrible with names, so I got to describe it. I know Sophia, whatever the fuck, from Modern Family.
Okay.
I got to put that down, man. I got to put that down. I love my Latina women and the accent and everything. Girls
just
got it going
you.
On. So she holds a place near and dear to my heart. Maybe a little lower than my heart, but she holds a place near and dear.
Maybe I'll post this podcast to her Facebook or her Twitter, and then maybe she'll reach out to you. And
yeah, I should be that lucky.
See what a stud you are.
Oh.
All right, Steve, thank you so much, man. OVO, man, we really with the shits, boy. Yeah, really with the shits. I should probably sign a hit, boy, cause I got all the hits, boy. Fuck all that Drake, you gotta chill shit. I be on my little mouse drill shit. Fuck all that rap to pay your bill shit. Yeah, I'm on some rappers pay my bill shit. All up on TV, I thought it made me richer. Wasn't paying me enough, I needed something quicker. So now I'm